Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Back to another edition of Covered in Glory. And Brett, we barely have time for any pleasantries at all today because we have a pair of incredible soccer games to cover. We have two derbies that I think rank among, I don't know, the 5 or 10 most anticipated matches of any given season. We have one in Manchester, which is the Manchester Derby, and then we are taking another trip to Spain today. And let's be honest, the reason we created the study abroad category was so we can cover matches like El Clasico between Barca and Real Madrid, and we are getting another chapter on Saturday morning. So before we dive into those matches, Brett, I thought we should just take a minute. What are the games in your mind that, like, it doesn't matter the year, it doesn't matter the season, it doesn't matter the players, it doesn't matter anything. As soon as the fixtures are released, they are circled, and you know where you will be as soon as those games kick off.
I would say North London Derby is probably my personal favorite. I feel like every Spurs Arsenal match that I've watched in Derby has gone off the rails. You know, minus the ones that were on at, like, you know, 4:30 in the morning or whatever Pacific time. I think that's probably my number one, weirdly enough. There's been a couple El Clasicos that have been great. But there's also been a few stinkers in there too. Like, there's been some sort of boring matches. But I still think, just because of the intensity of that rivalry, I think that's probably my number two. And then I think if we're going to do like a ad hoc top three, I would say probably the Manchester Derby would be the next one. Just because that was just a blood feud. I know City has been dominating, because of the fact that they have turned the former, you know, class of the Premier League into the underdog, and United is the underdog now in that matchup, I think it's made actually for a little bit more of an excitement around the match itself, because you have, like, the more prestigious club that if they win, it's like a huge deal now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You're a bit of a masochist and you did not list the Merseyside Derby. So your
absolutely
own
not
team plays in one of the biggest derbies in the world.
Nope.
It does not make your personal list.
Does not. I have seen too many red cards, like this year, by the way, that have ruined that derby. Also, it's not a rivalry when Liverpool kicks the crap out of Everton every single time they play. So it has been a mix of either super boring stalemates, red cards against Everton that have just completely turned the match around, or Liverpool just destroying Everton. And then the only one that maybe doesn't fit the mold is Jordan Pickford scissor kicking Virgil van Dijk and tearing his ACL and, like, ruining a season. So the Liverpool derby can just go away forever as far as I'm concerned.
I already regret bringing it up, even though I have to bring it up again later when we do talk about Liverpool. And you are right. It's not like the lion and the sheep have derbies. Like, the Lions just maul them and call it a day.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Packers-Bears rivalry in the NFL at this point.
When I texted you the question, is clearly you were thinking clubs only. If you were to throw in a little international flavor as well, I think you can add a couple other great ones to the list. So for me, just personally, Chelsea-Tottenham is the one I get up for the most, even though Chelsea-Arsenal is usually the more interesting match. Just something about Chelsea and Tottenham still strike a chord in me. Maybe it's also because I attended it live. And then, yes, the Manchester Derby is definitely on the list. El Clasico is definitely on the list. And then if you were to extend to international, Brazil versus Argentina.
Yeah.
Like, it seems to happen every single year, and that is one that you just can't miss anytime those two countries go to war. And then my personal number one, no surprise, that would be Dos a Cero,
yeah,
USA versus Mexico. That is the one that definitely, as soon as you see it get calendared for whatever competition it is, then that's the one that is an absolute must watch for that given night.
Yeah, I mean, definitely USA-Mexico has to be up there. I mean, that, especially now that that power dynamic has changed as well, which has made that that battle a lot more interesting. In past years, when it was like you go, they'd be going to Mexico City, and you're going to be like, "Oh, how bad is the U.S. going to get smacked now?" Or Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey and whatever other players or whatever garbage players were around them during those years, are they going to actually like keep us in the game? So now it's an interesting dynamic. I love the inclusion though of Argentina, Brazil. That's a great call.
Yeah, and look, these are the ones I want to watch, right? Like, yeah, they're not the greatest, most intense rivalries. Like, Lazio-Roma is probably more intense than almost any of this, or the old firm derby, Rangers and Celtic. Like, those are all super intense, but, like, I don't watch a lot of Scottish League soccer, and I'm not going to watch Roma as much as I
really
can.
Really, Toby, you don't watch a lot of Scottish League soccer? That surprises me. I mean, you have all this free time. Why are you not watching Scottish League soccer?
That's what I have you for. You tell me if I can turn it
on. I don't even watch Scottish League soccer. I'll tell you what. You make jokes all the time about how I need help. If I ever tell you that I'm freaking watching Scottish League soccer, you definitely need to send the men in white coats to come to my place.
And like the thing about those matches are like I would attend any one of them. Like
in Celtic match, like, absolutely.
Being for any like decent rivalry in person is amazing. It's just like, I don't want to watch it on TV. And I love places that share a border. And so like, I think that brings a lot of extra intensity. And so like, yes, I know Liverpool and Manchester United are probably the biggest rivalry in the Premier League. And they're like semi-close, but it isn't the same as like an intra-city derby or countries that are right next to each other that have been fighting over resources for like hundreds or thousands of years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're 100% on there. That kind of like, I mean, this is a part of the beauty of soccer, right? Like you have all this like geopolitical stuff that goes into this long-standing sport that makes these things like so intense. Like even, you know, even the El Clasico that we're talking about, I mean, there was a Spanish Civil War that produced a dictator who made Madrid his team, and that is felt in a ton of different places throughout Spain. So I mean, it's really cool. I mean, obviously the stuff that's in Italy is also deep rooted, where there's just tons of factions. I mean, the Lazio Ultras are freaking insane, like gangsters basically. So I mean, it's kind of the fun and the joy. I mean, obviously hooliganism is not good, but some of that deep-seated stuff, the history behind it, makes for these things that are really fascinating that no U.S. sport can really compare to.
All right, hooliganism not good is I think your title for this episode. When you
there we go. I've been on a roll. I'm on a roll of titles too, so but I'll take your suggestion.
It is, it's not sad. It's inspiring how much you love a good title. Like, I don't give you any opinion on it whatsoever. I find out the name of the show when it gets posted with everybody else.
I mean, come on. Yeah, I've had a couple of pretty creative ones lately. You got to give me some. I mean, let's put the bullying aside. We'll pretend nobody's listening. It's a quiet room. You got to give me some credit. My title's been pretty good lately. Come on.
Yeah, they have been good, and you hit Salah on the first to score last week. So you are on a streak, my friend.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm too excited about the derbies to hang out on the top of the show for any longer. So let's go ahead, take our break, give Caesar some love, and then head right over to Manchester to get into this match.
You know, when the conversation turns stampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. Omaha Full. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
All right, Brett, we are back. And as promised, we have Manchester United 8th at 15 points versus Manchester City 2nd at 21 points. This game is Sunday at 11:30 a.m. City is minus 150. Caesars has United at plus 390. The draw is plus 290. City minus a half goal is minus 145. United's double chance is at plus 115. Brett, I'll go ahead and let you lead off for this match because I have a definite opinion that you cannot shake no matter what you say. So I just like to see you try.
I feel like we might be on the same page as this, but this is not going to be a good derby, I don't think. I watched United at Old Trafford against FC Copenhagen, who is probably the worst. No, I wouldn't say the worst. They're bottom four of Champions League team, and that was a match. And the whole time I was watching that, the only thing I could think of was Andre Onana is saving United's butt right now against FC freaking Copenhagen. Yeah. I mean, it's just like it's really not good in United right now. The underlying numbers are bad. The performances are dreadful to watch. I watched the Burnley match where they snuck out a 1-0 win, and I just want that 90 minutes of my life back. I don't really care what City's doing. I can't take my eyes off the dumpster fire that is United right now.
Yeah, look, I had already made my pick for this game when they released the lineups last week for United, and they're rolling out Maguire and Evans as a center back pairing, and then McTominay and Amrabat in the pivot.
So, well, and Victor Lindelof is playing left back these days.
What are we doing here? Like, what are we doing here? Yeah. Why is City not like minus 300 here? Why is this so close to a coin flip when that is the lineup that United is playing and they're struggling against FC Copenhagen midweek? And like, not only that, City's already out of the League Cup, so they actually have only one match this week. They get off until, I believe, next Sunday after this. And so there's no reason whatsoever that they need to rest or rotate or anything. I think they are going to absolutely smash them. And I haven't even brought up Casemiro's ankle injury yet. And so, like, without one of the linchpins of that team, and these are the guys that are going to roll out, and with Rashford still not getting on form, where is the competition going to come from? And plus, Brad, I mean, like, the City defense did an incredible job against Brighton last week. Brighton is this like offensive powerhouse that just goes full throat. And they were completely quiet for the first 60, 65 minutes of the game. With Rodri back, with Stones back, with Josko coming into form, and even with Akanji suspended, I don't see how United's going to score here short of a fluke. And I can see exactly how City's going to put up at least two. So not only am I more than happy to take this at City at minus 145, I think I'd adjust it up. Why only take it at City minus 145? Why not adjust it up and get in like that plus 165, plus 170 range to cover a goal and a half?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would be slightly worried about is just the poor finishing luck. I could see like a goal and a half worth of chances for City, where it's just they only get one of them. I mean, they absolutely murdered Young Boys. I think they had like 4.5. Actually, I have the screen up. 4.2 XG. expected goals against Young Boys. So, I mean, I think the attack is back, and also United has been making attacks come back from the dead. It's like a Thriller video since we're in Halloween. Play United and your attack comes back from the dead. But I don't think there's a wrong move as far as the adjusted line goes. I mean, I do feel like this could get out of hand. And if you like the number moving that line up, there is a range of outcome where this is a 7-1 type situation, in my opinion.
I actually just pulled the line. I was lowballing it. It's +190. +190 if you adjust it up to a 2-goal win. And not only that, Brett, I mean, I'm going hard in this match. Like, not only that, my prop is City to win the nil. So give me City to win the nil at +200. And if you really want to get fancy, if you really want to go after it, like, I don't know what the combination is of at least 2-0, but it's got to be in like the mid-300s to maybe even the 400s. And like one out of four times this match, I just don't tell me how City is going to score. I'm sorry. Tell me how United is going to score outside of a fluke, unless we're just betting on soccer is fluky and soccer is random and Rashford can go 10 straight games without being in form. And Fernandez is suddenly going to, get through that monstrous defense and get one in. Like, even Dallo's winner last week, Brett, it's not like that was a thunder bastard. I mean, the guy hit a ball that was well struck, but the goalie got two palms on it and then pushed it into the upper corner. Yeah. It's not like it was rattling the cage up there. Like, I don't see it. And like, now that I said all this, like, lock in the United 1-0 win, but come on. This seems like the match I dream of. This seems like the match I dream of, that City is on the road. They've had a couple of recent bad results that threw up some smoke screens, and they're playing their hated rivals that are always overrated and are a public team. And I don't think every number is wrong here. I think you're getting value on essentially every number.
Yeah, this definitely just feels like these lines are pricing in some type of illusion that City struggles aren't relative to being one of the best teams in the world, if that makes sense. Like, City struggling still means that they're a top four team. United right now, are they a top 8 team? Are they a top 9 team?
Like, you're talking to Manchester or what?
Yeah, in Manchester with the beer leagues. Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's, I mean, you're talking about how, like, I'm running through the players in my head: Garnacho, Antley, Hoylund. Like, who are you concerned about here, right? Like, and even with Bruno, you know, he'll make a clever run into the box, or he'll pull one from 30 something yards. Like, this United team can't control games. They're going to have the ball like 30 or 25% of this game. With Amrabat and McTominay pivot, how are you maintaining possession like ever? So it seems like you're getting a perfect storm of United is fluking out these 1-0 wins, which is a United specialty apparently, but is also a thing that in the stats community and the spreadsheet community is fluky and lucky. And you have a City team that has the illusion that they're struggling, which really the only thing that's been struggling is the attack. Like, the defending hasn't been bad. I mean, you mentioned the Brighton match. Like, they've been shutting teams down. You know, the Young Boys did score, but they scored off like a 0.4 expected goals worth of chances. So, I mean, this is definitely something where I think you're getting the combination of those two things. A really popular team that can move a line with the bets in United, that's been lucky and fluking out results, versus a team that's been getting hammered in the media for looking like they might be broken. And people don't have the relative sense in the public sometimes to realize that City struggles are first world problems. United is a legitimately bad, maybe possibly top 8 or 9 team at this point. So I'm with you on both. It's funny that you mentioned the clean sheet was +200. I always do my notes like, or double check my notes like right before the show, because I've had a tendency to make anytime goal scorers get the first time goal scorer odds. So I always double check. They've already dropped Toby to +160 on that clean sheet number on Caesars.
Jesus. Yeah. I wrote that down like 2 hours ago.
Yeah. It's funny. That's why it's funny.
2 hours ago. Thank goodness I already bet it.
Yeah. And I have not taken it yet. And believe me, when we're done recording this show on Thursday night, I will be like going to Caesars right away and putting my bet down because that line is clearly dropping fast. Yeah, but I'm with you. I think this is a play where it's like any type of City goal scoring over or United goal scoring under, I don't really see where you go wrong. And I'm keeping it simple with taking the regular money line and then the clean sheet win. But this has the smell of something that just could be worth 30 minutes in and you're like, all right, what else is on?
That's really funny, right? Like we said, like this, when the fixtures came out, whatever it was in June, this is the one you circle, and then you're going to be 30 minutes in and wanting to flip the channel.
Yeah. Well, because I don't think this is going to be the best iteration of this derby. But again, there has been some pretty lopsided matchups with these teams being, you know, going in completely different directions over the last 5 to 7 years. And they've turned out to be matches. So maybe, you know, as per usual, fade us. I mean, you can never go wrong fading us too. But this match, everything that we are feeling, thinking on the spreadsheets is telling us this could be one of the uglier derbies for Manchester United.
Yeah, and I don't know how United will eventually make it back. Like that much I am certain of. They're too well resourced. It looks like they've got a new minority owner coming in who might have some sort of decision-making authority. He's going to want to make a splash. And it's not like they haven't spent money, but I guess that's kind of the sad part, right? Like the guys they're spending money on aren't critical in the biggest matches of the year. Like where's Mason Mount right now? Where's Casemiro's not, you know, I know he's hurt and all that, but like to spend the amount of money they have over the last 10 years and you're rolling out Maguire, Evans, McTominay as your spine like in the Manchester Derby, like, I don't know, seek God.
Yeah, I mean, well, you also mentioned that they've whiffed. I mean, I don't know if they will. It's hardest with Højlund, TBD, but that was a huge outlay for a kid that was sort of kind of playing for Atalanta. You know, like that's not the player that like United needs to take a chance on. That's like a team where you're like, all the top tier, blue tier 19-year-olds are going to go to a big club. That's like a middle of the pack, you know, maybe like a Aston Villa type signing where like, we're going to take a chance on this kid because he might be good and he's not certain yet. So we'll throw a bunch of money at him and just hope. Right. That's not a United sign. And Anthony was the classic like Doc Rivers thing. I mean, as basketball guys, we love this Doc Rivers. If you scored 25 points against him the next year, you were playing for the Celtics.
Yeah, I know.
and that's the same thing. Ten Hag coached Anthony at Ajax and was just like, this kid's good. And then he signed him. And then it's like, again, Anthony was an okay prospect. And, you know, obviously if some of the personal stuff with what he did to his significant other is true, I'm rooting for him to continue to struggle. But he was just an okay, you know, pretty good prospect that they threw superstar money at. that's why, you know what, man, I'm just going in. Brighton's going to rule the world one day. There's like three soccer clubs that know what they're doing. Let United just keep burning money. Here comes Brighton.
Well, the most dangerous seat in the stadium is third row on either side of the goalpost when Anthony has the ball. He cannot hit the goal mouth to save his life, but he could concuss a person not paying any attention who's three Guinnesses in holding a meat pie like nobody's business.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Toby, right, on the money as per usual.
Well, let's hope I'm on the money on that bet because this is one of my strongest feelings of the year, which, as I said, guarantees a 1-0 United victory. All right, let's move off of it and get down to another match before we get to El Clasico. Crystal Palace, 11th, 12 points versus Tottenham, first at 23 points, Friday at 3 p.m. Spurs are -130, Palace is +340, the draw is +275. Spurs minus half a goal is -135. Caesars has Palace at +105. So, I want to scream fade Spurs. I want to do it so bad, but they're starting to impress me, Brett. They're starting to impress me.
I'm all in on Spurs. I love Spurs. I'm just going to say
it. Oh, my gosh.
They're so much fun to watch, man.
They are, their press, their smoothness coming out of transition, what they're showing defensively, which is definitely not what I anticipated ever saying about the Spurs this year. But Vanderwyn and Romero are, I don't know, the third best center back pairing in the league right now. I mean, I don't know exactly the rankings, but I would have put them ninth or 10th to start the year. And they're clearly in the top handful. And I feel gross. I feel gross after all of my screaming about them, but you got to admit when you're wrong, and they're top of the table for a reason. I don't think that they're going to finish there. I'm not even confident they'll finish in the top four, but the style they're playing at this moment is absolutely working, and how deadly and technical and precise they are on the counter when they create the turnovers off this press. If they can keep that form, then yes, they're going to finish top four. I don't know if it's fluky or not right now. I don't know what your spreadsheets say, but if Sun and Madison are going to do this, then they're going to win a lot of matches.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if our boy Ange ran for president next year, I would probably throw a vote his way. But he has made them relevant, which is really cool. And I think it's good for the league. I don't know. The underlying numbers say this is more of a top four contender, obviously, than a title contender. But they've banked enough points that they're definitely going to probably be going down to the wire for one of those top four spots. But there's two things that have, three things that have really impressed me. One, Aj is not back down. Like, that press is coming against everybody. It's coming against City. It's coming against Liverpool. It's coming against Brighton. They're not backing down. Two, we have to have a talk with Conte, because why was Bissouma not playing? I mean, he was out against Fulham, and Højbjerg was able to step in and do fine, but he has been awesome for them. And last year he couldn't, like, Conte just like didn't want to play him, which is just bizarre to me. And then one of my things that makes me think that this is not a just kind of fluky, like, stylistic thing, kind of like when a defensive coach moves off from an NFL team and you get the newest offensive genius, the New York Giants right there. Right. And then the team takes off for a year and then sputters, but it's a small thing. But to me, this is a big deal. When they played against Fulham, they started their attacking band of your boy Kulishevsky, Son, Richarlison, and then Madison kind of playing in that 10 role behind him.
Loved it.
Absolutely fascinated to see this. I expected Richarlison to be through the middle.
Yeah.
Son was through the middle. And the thing is both guys play up in those spots, because one of the things that made Richarlison kind of sort of an interesting, productive winger is, one, his defensive work rate, willingness to track back, win balls in the defensive third was elite. But also he was able to get his head on balls. He was able to be an aerial threat in the box from the wing, which most wingers are kind of crafty dribblers cutting inside. They're not going to be like leaping and contesting for balls in the box. So it plays up all of Richarlison's best skills. And we've talked for 2 years now that Son has stopped doing wingery things. And so our guy Ange has just been like, well, he's not really a winger anymore, so I'm going to play him as a striker, because that's basically what his profile is, right?
I think it's really interesting. And, like, take this homework assignment away. Do they have the ball? I don't know exactly how to say this. From the time they take possession to the time they score, do they have the lowest average in the league? Because it seems like if there's buildup or things like that, they're fairly impotent. But if there's a set piece, or, you know, the press kicks in and it's three passes in back of the net, then that's where they're like hyper deadly. And so, like, if you were to take the average amount of time from possession to scoring, I imagine they would be kind of at the bottom of that table. Ooh. Which is a good thing, by the way, for modern soccer.
Yeah, that's an analyst thing, I think. I'm going to try to pull them up quick now. But,
well, no, I mean, take it away. But, like, in that style, that's what Son's the right striker. I was wrong about that. Like, he can be fine up top if his entire goal is to not touch the ball more than twice and put it in the net off of a quick transition, because He still is precise. His movement's still good. He's not scoring goals like he used to. He's not scoring goals like off service from Kane or moving into the half space while everybody pays attention to Harry. He's now just scoring these like really quick, really precise, like slide rule pass, one touch back of the net with almost no room for error, right? Like it just has to be perfect. But if it's perfect, he's not like Richarlison, where Richarlison will find a way to screw that up. And Son is just far better at that in his technical finishes.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think Son's a little bit craftier with his movement as well. But to kind of answer your question, the analyst, which is powered by OptiData, has Spurs third in the Premier League with 24 direct, what's classified as a direct attack. So that could be a counter off a turnover. Essentially, what you're saying is like they win the ball back and they just kind of begin their blitz.
Well, what I'm also saying is they don't have like a full suite of options available to them. It's not like they could beat you 10 different ways like City can. It seems like they just beat teams two ways, which is set pieces and transition goals.
Yeah. And I mean, that's like you're talking about modern soccer, right? Like those are the two areas that I think are the optimal way of the two best things to optimize. Set pieces, his long way thing. Stats Bomb is a company that's been out for forever. Now it seems like they've been in that space maybe 10 plus ish years that have set piece seminars for clubs around the league, basically touting the fact that teams are leaving a ton of goals on the table with set pieces. And if you're not going to sign the best attackers in the world, which Spurs are not going to sign those players still, you better be able to press in the final third and get turnovers, because that's kind of like your superstar signing. That's your guy that breaks down a packed box, is getting those final third turnovers.
Yeah. And I mean, they've also benefited. It's like Leicester and when the year they made the title, of like the quality of play versus the preseason expectations of individual players. And if we were to put that list together, Maddison and Bissouma would be towards the top of it. Like the impact we thought they'd have this year versus the impact they're actually having, is there's a giant delta.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing about Maddison that's interesting to me is I thought he'd be in the Bruno Fernandes role of like, he raises your floor, but like, can he really help a good team? And he seemed to kind of subjugate himself to the style, because he's playing, I think he has the most passes into the penalty area for him. Against Fulham, he was dropping like in line with the center backs to try to progress the ball forward. So we've kind of seen James Maddison take a step up. And that's been one of the things that we've talked about with like Newcastle's rise. Is like we've credited Eddie Howe with making players like Almiron like take clear steps up. And I think Ange Postecoglou has done that with James. So James Maddison. So there's some good stuff going on at Spurs. And I mean, to be honest, it is just so much fun to watch a team play like that versus Conte's like counter crap where they play like the worst team in the league and he'd still be sitting back in his 3-5-2 waiting to break with Kane and Son. Yeah. So yeah, give me this Ange 2024. Here we go.
Yeah. Well, Palace got drilled by Newcastle 4-0. Held to a scoreless draw against Forest the week before. They only have one goal in their last five matches and have been really terrible in front of the net. So, of course, I'm taking after all that love fest. Yeah. Give me the Spurs money line at minus 130. And then for my prop, I mean, people are dropping dead from this press. Like, they are just killing folks with it. And it's relentless and it never seems to let up. So the other prop that I like to take advantage of that is people wear out and eventually make mistakes. Because they're either physically or mentally exhausted by it. Spurs to score second half is minus 190. And so I don't, you know, I'm not in love with the line. Like minus 190 isn't a lot of juice, but the Spurs seem to score every second half. And then you take the minus 190, you find something else to pair it with, and you can get yourself a real nice number.
Yeah, we actually have different views of how the press is going to function, but we both use that to make our prop bets here, because mine is Spurs to win the first 15 minutes. So they have to basically score a goal at plus 138. Because I did watch the Fulham match on Monday because I am a lunatic. And if you're watching that press, I mean, the presses are usually the most aggressive within the 30 minutes, because then players tire out. And then when you maybe get some subs, like you can revive it a little bit again. But the combination of the Spurs press versus the fact that Palace really don't have any midfielders, especially with Eze out. At least I believe he's out with his hamstring injury. Don't have any midfielders to essentially move the ball into the final third. Like, this is telling me that they're going to get one of those turnovers that they got against Fulham that turns into a goal. So I love that bet. It was very close. If this was trendy, it would be making my second guess express. I was too chicken to go with that one. I took the money line instead, but I do like that bet.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that you're kind of making my point as well. Like, the way the press usually works is the first 15 minutes. And then when it's subtime, but somehow the Spurs are keeping up high pressure, like deep into like the 70, 80 minute mark of the game. It's pretty remarkable. And they have, just to put a number on it, if you want to do trendy and you want to make this a head pick, Tottenham has scored in the second half of 9 straight games.
Whoa.
All right. So let's move over to Chelsea, who are 10th at 12 points versus Brentford, 14th at 10 points. This is Saturday, 7:30 a.m. It's the early game. Chelsea is minus 160. Caesars has Brentford at plus 440. The draw is plus 285. Chelsea minus half a goal is minus 170. Brentford is plus 130. So, Brent, I mentioned it last week. Are we starting to see the Chelsea regression to the mean that we've been waiting for, and goals are happening that might that probably shouldn't be happening, like the Mudryk cross, whereas beforehand they couldn't convert like gilded edge chances over and over again? Because I think we're seeing it. I think we're seeing math starting to kick in here, and they're creating an equal number of chances they always have, but all of a sudden they're outperforming XG instead of wildly underperforming it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about it. And this was kind of the underlying thing, too, in talking about Marcus Rashford as well. XG came for him. He finished hot last year, and he certainly isn't this year. But I think that we never know how variance is going to hit in sports. Like, we just don't know. But we do know that they're primed for it coming. So whether it comes in one big wave right now, it might. Whether it kind of spreads itself out with goal plotting in random spots throughout the next 4 or 5 months, that might also be the case. But I mean, the promising thing, and this is why these numbers exist, you know, it's why expected goals is a good predictive number to look at, a tool to use, is it's telling us that Chelsea is playing better and that the chances should come. And that when they do start coming, we are going to see a team that's resembling a top four team, right? Yeah. But with that said, Brentford is plus 440 on the money line per Caesars, and they are right behind Chelsea in the expected goal per 90 margin. And Brentford has a history of just producing super random performances that turn into wins. And at 4-1, with us being unsure if this is Chelsea's upswing or not, and Brentford just being this weird, super high variance team, I couldn't get away from the money line on this. And it's nothing against Chelsea. I am with Chelsea rounding into form. This is just a weird line for a team like Brentford that has a history of just stealing random wins.
Yeah, that's a professional bet. That's a professional bet, leveraging the odds versus the likely outcomes and looking for an edge or margin or EV or however you want to kind of refer to it. So I don't hate it whatsoever. I just am loving what I'm seeing as a Chelsea fan. I don't get to say that very often. They're so lively on the wings right now, with Sterling kind of in like real vein of form. And Palmer has been a revelation coming into the starting lineup as well. He's done a lot to unlock the potential of the team. And I'll tell you who's the most surprised. Like, we talk about, you know, performance versus expected ability. It's Cucurella. Cucurella pocketed Saka last game, pocketed him. And if you had told me that before the season, I would have assumed that we were talking about Brighton Cucurella and like a 7-year-old Saka. The fact that he was able to do it to this version of him and take him out of the game for such a long stretch of the match was wild. And he is just playing like a man possessed. And so if we're going to get these guys, and also like sneakily, Brett, like, look at our bench all of a sudden. Yeah. Like, the range of options that is available for second half adjustments is the envy of the league outside of City. And so this is time for Poch to earn his money, right? Like, he's starting to get all of his players back. He's starting to get his tools back. They're starting to believe he has plenty of time to work with them without Europe. And I know we have a very rough run of fixtures, which is another reason I think they're going to really give it to Brentford. And so I'm taking them on the money line. And I'm also taking Cole Palmer on the anytime goal at plus 163. Not only do I think he's going to score from open play because of how close he's been and the intelligence of his movement lately, you also get the penalty equity. And with the way Sterling and Mudryk and other players are running at guys in the box, they're 50-50 get a penalty in any game right now.
Yeah, I have zero problems with Chelsea bets. I mean, I wasn't feeling particularly strongly towards one side or the other. I mostly just went, this was my head pick with seeing the number and seeing Brentford being a pretty stable team right behind them that has an ability to kind of produce random performances in matches. But I mean, I think all Chelsea bets are great. Like, I have zero problems seeing those outcomes coming. I think the value's there. And Chelsea to me is definitely a top four or five team at this point and I think the performances are going to finally start matching that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to see where the table is at Boxing Day, but if there was I don't know if lines are available to just bet the second half of the year. Like, if you can just bet sections of the table, but I think they're going to be one of the top three teams from Boxing Day forward. So, or maybe that's just, you know, wishful thinking, but we'll see either way. All right, let's wrap up our Premier League coverage with Liverpool, fourth at 20 points versus Nottingham Forest, 15th at 10 points. This game is Sunday at 10 a.m. Liverpool is minus 380, Forest is plus 950, the draw is plus 470. Poole minus a goal and a half is minus 135, Forest is plus 105. So, Brett, you teased it a little bit earlier. What were your takeaways from yet another disappointing Everton performance in a Merseyside derby?
Nothing. It's red cards. Ruin derbies. I don't know. I mean, Ashley Young got sent off in the 39th minute. Like, it ceases to become a game when the underdog goes down a player.
Well, they had to. I mean, yeah. That was a moment of madness from Ashley Young. Like,
I'm not saying arguments. I'm just saying it always sucks when a red card is out in a derby, especially when it's for the underdog team, because it just made that like sort of an unwatchable inevitability, you know. But hey, it helped me hit my solo bet. So yeah, thanks for Everton. I appreciate that.
Yeah, my boy Diaz was just tearing him up. So Ashley Young was probably happy to hit the shower and get away from Diaz out there on the left.
Yeah, I mean, it's Liverpool's good again. Like, we need to just, you know, be ready for that. I mean, it's especially us kind of following the Europa action today, and Gravenberch was awesome again. And I mean, we haven't even really seen him impact Premier League matches at this point. Liverpool is just a really good team. And so that was part of the disappointing thing of like Everton losing a player definitely had no chance to stay in that derby after that, because they were already facing a far superior team. But I mean, part of this is just Liverpool, I think, is going to be pretty good again. And I think they're going to be good, you know, in a little bit of a high variance way because of the type of personnel that they roll out there. But like, this team has the firepower to play anybody in the world. It's a little bit sad that they're not in the Champions League this year. We got to watch United play like Copenhagen basically to a stalemate and eke out a 1-0 win while Liverpool's sitting around in Europa. But hey, can't win them all, man.
Well, this is pretty exciting, right? I mean, like, we're talking about Liverpool, how good they are. We're turning around on Tottenham, and I will start fading them again eventually. But right now, they look like a class team. And of course, you have Arsenal and City. Chelsea's coming back and making their run. Like, obviously, we think United's fading away a little bit, and the Tonali news is going to hit Newcastle. But we've got five, you know, top class clubs right now rounding into form, which will make for competitive matches week in, week out. For this one, the adjusted line is strangely a good measuring stick for Liverpool, as the only team all year to beat Forest by two goals was City. And perhaps equally strangely, the only team to score three against Forest is United, not exactly the league's most feared offense, as we covered earlier. But Poole, as you mentioned, is just absolutely banging in goals right now. You brought up Europa. They hit five today in that match. They seem to be getting, you know, two, three, four every single time they take the pitch. And I went back and forth on this one a half dozen times trying to think about that measuring stick. But finally, I decided to take them on the adjusted rather than just straight up, out of respect for the recent run of results.
Yeah. I mean, I took the money line there. And I mean, there have been very smart people that have basically said defense is overrated in soccer. And so jam as many attackers on the pitch as possible. And we're kind of seeing this iteration in both Brighton and in Liverpool. But Liverpool has just more depth and quality. Like, they're bringing off, you know, Gravenberch, who's been at Ajax and Bayern, and now at Liverpool. You know, they're playing Szoboszlai, who's a freaking star at 21 or 22 already in the midfield. And then, you know, Darwin Nunez has been like a super sub. So seeing a superstar charge attack here from Liverpool. I think the finishing variance will always maybe just be the only thing that trips them up. They'll have the random, you know, one goal games that should have been four, shutouts that should have been two, types of thing. So with that in mind, and with the fact that they still are playing midweek games, and Europa is known as the poison chalice for a reason, and the fact that our boy, let's give a shout out to our boy, Matty Turner, in the pipe, starting for a Premier League team. Pretty freaking cool. It was one of the positives of, you know, a team like Forest being able to appoint an American goalkeeper who's getting just a ton of minutes now at the highest level, best league in the world. But Turner is an elite shot stopper. So my bet for this, for the prop, with both teams to score no at just minus 105, because here was my logic behind it. Toby, you can, as always, pick it apart.
Yeah, this will be interesting.
If Forest is going to win this game, they'll roll out their back three. They'll get some shot stopping from Turner, some wayward shots from Liverpool. They probably have a range of Liverpool goals and a Forest win between 0 and 1. Nottingham Forest's attack, not good. And there's a very good chance that Liverpool press and just blow them off the pitch completely with one of the best shot stoppers in the world behind them as well, in Alisson. So I felt like there's good ranges of outcome in a Liverpool match or a Liverpool win that have Forest at 0. And there's a very good range of outcomes in a freak Forest win that has Liverpool at 0. And you're basically getting this line at even money.
Yeah. Okay. I think based on your analysis, I'd rather take Forest at plus 950 and the Liverpool clean sheet win, but maybe they'll end up at about roughly the same place. I don't know. Or I'd probably take my prop bet. And the only thing that you'd be screwed on is if Liverpool really blast them, because I'm just taking the under, because the under has been bet up really heavily because of Liverpool's recent run of results. And as you said, the Forest attack isn't that great. So they're not going to over contribute to it, right? Like, their range is 0 to 1. And so the under on 3.5, not 2.5, but 3.5 is minus 130. And it just gives you so many likely score lines, right? Like, that gives you 2-0, 3-0, 1-0. That gives you 2-1. That gives you 1-1. That gives you, obviously, you know, 0-0. Like, it gives you so many of the possible outcomes that you're really only, like, done if it's 2-2 or 3-2 or 4-0 or whatever. And at that point, like, tear your ticket up and smile because you just watched an explosive match.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think one thing that might factor into that is, like, Chris Wood had 7 shots against Luton Town in Forest's last game. That is absolutely not happening against Liverpool. So betting the under when things like that are going to be factored into the models that make the lines, I think it's a good idea.
Cool. All right, well, I will tell you what is not a good idea, but a great idea, Brett, and that is turning into ESPN Plus for El Clasico this Saturday. So let's take one more break and then let's get into it. All right, Brett. All right. Let us head down to Spain for the match of matches, El Clasico, ESPN Plus at Saturday at 10:15 a.m. Barcelona is third in La Liga right now at 24 points versus Real Madrid, who is first at 25 points. Only 1 point separates these two titans so far this year. Barcelona is plus 145 in this match. Real Madrid is plus 175. The draw is plus 245. Barcelona minus half a goal is plus 130. And the Real Madrid double chance is minus 170. So, Brett, we talked about Real Madrid earlier when we were covering their derby against Atletico. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona. And I think that this match is going to be excellent. As I said, you know, it's hard to miss if you're a soccer fan. But it is hurt a little bit by the injuries that are hitting Barca right now. So they're not going to have Pedri. They're not going to have Koundé. But it looks like Lewandowski might play. And, like, De Jong, I don't know what he's going to do. But, like, to what end? Is it really worth shooting a guy up with horse tranquilizer like you're in a Spanish version of Varsity Blues to play a match in October, even if it is against your biggest rival? And will they be effective, or is this just kind of window dressing and we're still going to look at the same result?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish I knew that answer. But it definitely has been shocking to see Lewandowski rumored to be playing. You're mentioning horse tranquilizers. I think Barry Bonds might take a flight over to Spain, give him some of the clear or whatever he had there. It's like impossible to say, you know, their efficacy, like when they're all shut up. But I mean, the thing that I always think about too, that I think most normal fans are like, oh, you know, like we can just I need to sit out. Like, what's the point? It's a long season. These guys grew up, you know, the ones that truly love the sport. They live for these matches. They live for these moments. And it may be something where Barcelona's training staff is like, yeah, we really want Lewandowski to not play. And he's like, F you guys, I'm out there and no one's going to stop him. And he's just going to play. So I don't know how it'll look. I mean, given that he was supposed to be out long term, I can't imagine he's going to be effective, but maybe we'll see a Kirk Gibson type moment or something, and he'll be hobbling out there scoring goals and poaching shots in a amazing El Clasico. But I'm not super bullish on that. I just think guys, especially, I mean, soccer players' feet, ankles, like that's their livelihood. Like this isn't like an NFL lineman or something. You know, he needs those things to kick balls into nets. So I can't imagine that he's going to be in a good position to be super effective, but you know, hard to say.
Yeah. And it makes him, I mean, not to keep repeating it, but it just makes them so hard to evaluate. Right. Cause it's you're not going to see their first choice 11. So once you're not going to see Barca's first choice 11, you're getting down into their depth and their substitutes and things like that against Real Madrid, like outside of Courtois, they have everybody, right? They don't really have anybody suspended. They have a clean bill of health. They've got
Eder Militao's out too, but I mean that's been a while as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I mentioned Courtois, I should have mentioned Militao, but they don't have any like short-term injuries or nagging injuries. No. Like anybody on the pitch seems to be, you know, green lights all over the place, and they just have so much freaking talent. So with Vinny Jr. up top, Rodrigo up top, and most importantly, Jude Bellingham pulling the strings, it's really hard in my mind not to take them over a banged up Barca squad, even if they're at home with that Camp Nou magic. So I can't believe Real Madrid's the underdog here. I guess this is just full respect for the stadium. But what did you think when you looked at these odds?
I actually... can't tell how good either team is because I looked at the La Liga schedules and the Champions League schedules that they played, and neither of these teams have played anybody that made me like that I could use as a measuring stick, right? Like that to me has been one of the things that I always go to, especially early in the year. Like expected goals can like lie to you in that sense. But even in the Champions League, Barcelona has gotten Antwerp, a very, very watered down version of Porto. This is not like one of those frisky Porto teams that you don't want in the round of 16. And then Shakhtar Donetsk, who's the Ukrainian team that's been displaced, obviously, because of the war. And then in La Liga, they haven't played anybody. They haven't played, obviously not played Madrid. They haven't played Atletico. They haven't even played Real Sociedad. Like they have, I don't know what to make of these results. Their underlying numbers are great, but they've played some of the worst teams in La Liga and have the easiest pool in the group stages in the Champions League. And then I was like, oh, well, that makes me think like Madrid is, even though their underlying numbers aren't as good, they might be better suited. Well, they've only played one real team in Napoli, And Napoli, they end up winning that match, but Napoli had the better chances in that match. So I'm not really sure, like, if either of these teams, where they actually are against each other. So this line confused me to no end. And you know what happens when that happens to me, Toby? You know what I did. The cowards lay out the draw at plus 245 because I literally could not find any evidence. Because here's the other thing. I am with you that there are a bunch of star-studded names, and I love the rise of Jude Bellingham here at Real Madrid. But freaking Josselu is playing significant minutes. And for those of you that have followed the Premier League over the years, yes, that Josselu, Stoke City, Newcastle Josselu, is playing for Real Madrid. Significant, over 500 minutes. So there's a lot of things that made me want to pick Madrid and take the Madrid money line or take the Madrid spread, whatever it was. And then I got hit with those things, and I'm like, I can't actually see where there's a difference between these two teams. Coward's way out it is.
Yeah, so that's interesting because I wrote down the Real Madrid money line immediately and then just thought it through for a while, an unfortunately long time. And I ended up adjusting to the Real Madrid double chance just because of fear of the draw.
I like that. That would probably be where I wound up next.
So if I think about this, I think Real Madrid wins this half the time at least, and it's a draw 30% of the time or whatever it might be. And so both of those start to show EV. Like if you think it's a coin flip and you're getting plus 175, that's a good place to put a bet. But also if you think there's a 35% draw chance here, then getting it at minus 170 to cover both of those outcomes also puts you in a positive EV situation. So I adjusted down to that, and that's out of respect again for the hometown fans, the bigness of the moment. Like things just happen in derbies between these two teams that go against expectations, and to have both of those results covered in one bet is where I landed.
Yeah. And I think that's a good play. I think especially if Lewandowski plays and he's clearly very limited, you know, it's one of those things where you immediately see him on the pitch and you're like, he should not be playing. So I really like that bet. That was definitely my number two, but I'm a coward. So I take the coward's way out. Here's my thing that I think I do like in this match. It will be in my five pint. But the under of 1.5 goals in the second half is plus 100. So we're talking about how Josselu is freaking starting for Madrid. We're talking about how Lewandowski is already hobbled and probably going to need to be subbed off at some point. And Barcelona, you know, may not have De Jong. Their bench is not like overly impressive by any stretch of the imagination. And neither is Madrid. If you're starting Josselu, who is coming off behind the bench in Madrid, right? So I think that because of the lack of impact subs, the fact that these teams are like the anti-Liverpool in that regard, I think the goal scoring could be pretty low once the starters tire out. And I don't know if you're going to see two in the second half.
Yeah, I really like that bet because like the best firepower they have to bring off the bench is like Rafinha coming back from injuries.
Yeah.
And so you made the point earlier because I thought Lewandowski might be more of an impact sub to have his time out there kind of cut down a little bit. But you said they're not going to warm him up and then sit him down and then bring him back in later. But like, isn't that true of Rafinha as well? So like either they're going to start two hobbled guys or they're going to bring in extra hobbled guys in the second half. And either way, I like that you're under to hit. I think that's a really good bet.
Thanks, buddy.
You are welcome. So tell HR that I don't always bully you.
You mean the non-existent HR?
I
do. You imagine the stuffed bear that I have sitting in the chair for across me that I just put HR on.
I went in the prop market to Jude Bellingham. And so I saw a headline.
Hey, Jude.
I saw a headline in a publication this week that called him Soccer's LeBron James. And I think that's like an over-Americanization of the way to view it, because there's been plenty of 20-year-old phenoms to come through that are just as talented and good as him. Like we're seeing it in Haaland or Mbappe or hell, Pogba back in the day. And LeBron was a little bit more one of the kind. But it gives you a sense of just how great he is already at his age. And to get a plus number for him to score or assist in what is a game that you made the point earlier about Lewandowski that he's probably been dreaming about playing in for most of his life. Like, this is why you sign with Real Madrid. And if he is this good this early in the first time he gets to do this, to come out and put a stamp on and put an impact by having a direct direct line to the score sheet, it's plus 145. So score or assist plus 145. This is just a bet. Because I think he is that guy. I think he is that dude. And I think he is going to be heard from in this El Clasico.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that I love about a bet like that is, barring an injury, he's never getting subbed off. Yeah. And some of these attackers, like you could see Rodrigo get subbed off. You could even see maybe even Vinny get subbed off. I mean, he's not playing for Brazil, so the odds are a little bit less likely. But with attackers, there's always that possibility that if you're betting that like assist line, that goal scoring line, that you may only get them for randomly 65 minutes because for whatever reason, the manager decision, for a load management reason, like they come off. Jude Bellingham is not leaving the pitch in this match unless he is dragged off because his leg is mangled. So yeah, I like that a lot.
All right. Well, it's late. My brain is mangled. So let's go ahead and give the 5 pint and get out of here, Brett. Thanks to Salah scoring first last week, you are up 8.5 to 4.3. Yeah. That was a genius addition to the 5 pint. It's half your total for the month. But as a result, because this is the last contest of the month, I kind of had to go after it a little bit. So the 5 pints that I am going to give out and try as I try to chase you down are City on the adjusted -1.5 at plus 190. City win to nil at plus 200. And so 2-0, I obviously take both of them. 3-0, I take both of them. But there's a whole range of score lines where one of those hits, and as a portfolio, I'm profitable. So that's my thinking there. I'm taking the Spurs money line at minus 130. And then I kind of teased this earlier, Brett. Tottenham to score second half. I needed something to pair it with. And there was Real Madrid on the double chance. You put those two together and you're at plus 142. And then finally, because I am chasing a little bit, both in the 5 pint and also in my soccer fandom, I am taking Chelsea, not on the money line, Brett. I'm adjusting it up. We're really going after this. Chelsea -1.5 plus 165.
Whoa. Wow.
It's like I've said on this show and I said on Trendy again this week. When you have teams that have this variance levels, chase the variance. Adjusted for City, adjusted for Chelsea. See if they do have that rate of form and get a full reward for their actual outcomes rather than just playing the, you know, kind of rote lines in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I mean, I think the boring part about our 5 pint this week is we're matching on two bets here. Myself am City clean sheet win and Spurs money line. Where we are going to be different is my cowardly bet of just the City money line at minus 150. And then my aggressive play is the opposite of your aggressive play.
Love it.
I am taking that Brentford money line at plus 440. And then the last one is the one, my El Clasico bet, because we got to have one there. As Toby Mergler is famous for saying, overs make friends, unders make money. Under 1.5 goals in the second half of El Clasico is my fifth and final pint. So we actually are only competing against three, but I kind of like the fact that, you know, we're on the same wavelength here, buddy.
Yeah, well, I wish you hadn't gotten out that second one because I'm going to be betting that IRL and then I'll be conflicted. That was a really good pick. All right, well, let's go ahead and take our leave of you. I hope that you have a great soccer weekend because on Saturday you get El Clasico on ESPN Plus. On Sunday you get the Manchester Derby. Fill it in with the other matches. Fill it in with the plethora of sports that we have right now. And then come back and listen to us next week where we will have our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Take care, everyone.